All right.
What's up, Dr. Nick Jacomas? It's David Downs, Leafly Senior Editor. Thanks so much for joining me in this quick chat about cannabis and cardiac health. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no worries. It's a pleasure to be here.
I understand that a press release came out from Stanford last week, wherein some researchers presented some heart health findings that there was an association with cannabis and cardiac events. But I also understand that we might not have the full picture yet, and a lot of the data is going both ways. Can you tell me what the news that came out last week and this sort of pernicious cycle we tend to find ourselves in?
Yeah, so there appears to be a press release out from the American College of Cardiology. And, you know, there was a meeting, and probably an annual meeting that they have, where some results were presented. And what's been released is sort of a summary of what was presented at that meeting. But as far as I can tell, the actual study is not out yet. And so I think what probably happened is, you know, the study is probably in the publication pipeline somewhere. The scientists who conducted it, as scientists often do, started presenting it at meetings after the study was completed, but before it's studied, which is perfectly normal. And, you know, the press release is really that. So the major caveat here is I can't actually see the study yet to evaluate the study itself. So all we have to go on here is sort of what's said in the press release, essentially.
What's the top line in the press release? And then what's the main caveat? That it's still being peer reviewed and no one's looked at the actual data yet?
I couldn't find the study, so I suspect that means it's not out yet. It's probably, I would guess, in the process of peer review. But based on the press release, the sort of headline for the study is they had a big database of medical patients with a bunch of different kinds of information. So for example, they had demographic factors for each patient, age, sex, things like this. They knew if they had, you know, various cardiovascular risk factors, you know, probably things related to their lifestyle or in their medical records. They
175,000 people.
Yeah, so this would be a huge database. A lot of these massive databases that exist out there get mined by research groups in studies like this. And they also had some genetics, right? So they have, you know, this is something called a Mendelian randomization study, and they're really sophisticated and complicated and sort of difficult to, you know, they're really complicated, so they can be tough to evaluate. And without the study, we can't actually do that. But that just basically means they've got some genetics information about, you know, different genetic variants that all of these people have, some of which are going to be related or predispose you to things like cannabis use disorder. And so, you know, they can sort of correlate.
Or cardiac events.
Yes. I mean, sort of, you know, everything that they have, and it's, I don't know exactly what they have unless the study's out and you can look at it, but, you know, they've got a bunch of stuff about medical patients, and then they can use some statistical analysis methods to look for associations between X, Y, and Z, and then, you know, factoring or controlling for all these other variables. So the sort of the punchline here that's been articulated is that after adjusting for age, sex, major cardiovascular risk factors, they found an association between daily cannabis use, but not monthly or less frequent cannabis use, and increased risk of cardiovascular disease, basically.
To the tune of like 30%.
Yeah, I think 34% more likely to have coronary artery disease for the daily consumers, but not the monthly or less frequent consumers.
Got it.
Yep.
Is that a lot? 30% association? Because I did Google like cigarette smoking heart attack risk, and like if you smoke at all, you're looking at a 200% risk of a heart attack. And if you smoke a pack a day, you're looking at a 300% risk of a heart attack, et cetera.
Yeah. And so it's important to you know, keep in mind sort of what these numbers refer to. So if daily cannabis users are 34% more likely to have coronary artery disease than those who have never used marijuana, which is the headline.
Or monthly users.
Or monthly. But that stat is compared to people who aren't consuming at all, according to their own self-report.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know the baseline there. So basically, what is the baseline rate of coronary artery disease? I don't know what it is off the top of my head. They'll probably have that in the study when it's published. But let's just say, you know, if it's 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000, you know, whatever that baseline is, it's, you know, 34% increase compared to that.
Yeah.
So that's the number.
How does that hit you? Does it track with what you generally read about cannabis and cardiac health over the years?
Yeah, so there's a couple things I would think about here. So one, just as a general, very general thing, you know, you want to always think about individual studies that come out in the context of the full sort of pool and history of related studies in that field. And the simple reason for that is when something is studied often and there's many, many studies on something, the studies rarely all agree with each other. Sometimes one finds an association and another doesn't find an association. Sometimes the effect is, you know, this big and sometimes it's half that big. So that's really why you want to see study results replicated and sort of compare across them. What's tricky about this field, sort of doing epidemiology and looking for associations from human patient data, where you're not doing an intervention, you're not doing a clinical trial or an experiment, you're just looking for associations. It's an observational study. If you sort of look at the broad spectrum of studies related to cannabis and cardiovascular health or ill effects, it's a pretty mixed bag. Sometimes you find associations, sometimes you don't. Sometimes, you know, one study finds an association, but another study with more statistical control doesn't find it, or another study like the one that we just talked about finds it for a specific subset of the people, in this case, the daily consumers. And so when you do these association studies, you know, you're always going to try and control for as many potential confounding factors as possible. But,
you know, Mendelian stuff.
Yes. The difficult thing is you can never control for everything and you don't know what you aren't controlling for that might be relevant. And so the other thing to consider is, you know, do we have information from in vitro studies or animal studies where they can dig into mechanism and understand the underlying biology that might be relevant here? And the question is, you know, is there any relevant biology that would make us think that this result is perhaps not surprising? Mm-hmm. And in the case of cardiovascular health and cannabinoids like THC, the answer is there is some evidence for that. So we do know that, you know, if you really hammer CB1 receptors with drugs that activate CB1 receptors, that does have effects on the cardiovascular system. It can have negative effects. You know, when you measure the health of, you know, human-derived cells in a petri dish and you really hammer on that receptor, it can cause problems. So there's some biology there. We know that some of the abnormalities that can be caused by that can be blunted by a CB1 receptor antagonist. So there's reason to think that CB1 receptors, which are pretty plentiful on blood vessels and things, you know, hammering them really hard for a long time plausibly would cause, you know, cardiovascular issues. So that perhaps says that it's maybe not surprising that you find this kind of association specifically for people who are consuming very, very frequently.
Yeah. And it sounded like there were some other limitations just from the press release that are worth digging into, like how people were using cannabis and exactly how much, isn't really captured yet.
Yes. So what they appear to have for the study is they just sort of know from self-reported data, presumably, are you consuming daily, you know, weekly? I'm guessing that the resolution they have is something like daily, weekly, monthly, and little to no consumption. What they don't have there, which is critical, is, you know, even within the daily consumers, how much are you consuming every day? What is the actual dose you're consuming? There's really no way to measure that by asking people to self-report their history, because no one can remember that information with precise granularity. And the other thing is the specific modality, right? Are you dabbing? Are you smoking flower? Are you vaporizing flower and so forth? And, you know, given that we're talking about inhalation as the most common way that people consume cannabis and that, you know, daily consumers are often going to be smoking, they're going to be combusting plant material or concentrates or something like that. You know, given the whole, you know, history of literature on, you know, smoking nicotine and other things, we know that combustion itself is problematic. Right. You know, one thing I always like to bring up here, because I think it really helps sort of orient people to how to think about this, is inhaling any combusted plant product is going to expose you to a lot of different toxic chemicals. So, for example, do you ever go camping?
Sure. I understand those campfires are gnarly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do too. And, you know, if you're sitting around the campfire and you can smell the campfire, you're inhaling that wood smoke. And
yeah, that's like 700 PPM with those marshmallows.
Yeah. So, you know, just lighting plant material on fire creates a lot of nasty stuff, carbon monoxide and aldehydes and things like that. So, you know, you'd also ideally want to be able to disentangle that. The problem here is you can't do this type of experiment in humans for practical and ethical reasons, right? You can't you can't give people something that might be associated with cardiovascular risk and track them over time. You can do that in animals. So you can look for these associations in humans and try and control for as many things as you have using a data set that's as rich as possible, but you're never going to be able to control for anything and really prove cause and effect. So you really need, you want to see multiple studies looking at the same association. And then you want to have, you know, research in animals and in the lab that gives you some kind of biology that makes it likely that there is a real effect going on here. And they're right.
For sure. This reminds me of the 90s and 2000s in California, where we did a lot of vaporization work and they found a lot of baddies in combustion. And then they looked at flower vapes and they didn't find any of those baddies. And one of the takeaways was, like, if you cared about lung health, was to look at flower vaping. And we've seen flower vaping really flourish post-legalization when people can get at products like the PAX and the PAX pellets now over just some dirt weed that they're twisting up in a old piece of Bible paper.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's safe to say that, I mean, if you have some marijuana buds, some plant material, and you either put it in a vaporizer and vape it, or you light it on fire and smoke it, it's certainly going to have less nasty stuff when it's vaporized, because the high temperatures involved in combustion, you know, are literally melting the molecules and stuff into a lot of these toxic byproducts. And so, you know, I think I feel comfortable saying that it's basically a fact at this point that vaporization, heating it at a lower temperature, is going to produce fewer of those nasty things than combustion.
Yeah, and then it seems like dose plays a big role. I know if you really get a big acute exposure to THC, people report tachycardia or their racing pulse.
Yep.
Or they'll feel their pulse increase.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, some people are smoking and then going and running, but that's a whole other story. And I've even heard Willie Nelson say his cardiologist says, like, back off of it. It is a little rough on the heart. Does that any of that track for you?
Like, just... Well, THC definitely causes an acute increase in heart rate. So. Okay. I'm sure for some percentage of people, you're naturally going to get some tachycardia and some, you know, some changes to the rhythm of your heartbeat. But you're definitely going to get an acute increase in the beats per minute of your heart. You know, the data that I've seen that's out there that's pretty robust is that, you know, roughly speaking, in about the first 30 minutes after you smoke, your heart rate's going to be elevated. And then, you know, it goes back down after that. But you definitely are going to get an acute increase in heart rate for THC consumption.
I was just in Europe and everywhere they're smoking cigarettes and you can't smoke weed as much. And I found myself going, is this why I used to just smoke tobacco? Is because I couldn't get at weed? Do you have any sense of the relative risk of cannabis versus tobacco or alcohol, these common intoxicants on the heart? I know alcohol isn't exactly easy on the heart. And then tobacco is gnarly on the heart.
Yes, that's true. Tobacco is gnarly on the heart. What I don't know there, I haven't looked into this. The vast majority of the literature on smoking nicotine products, tobacco products, is going to be on smoking those products. I'm not sure how much work has been done out there to actually compare vaporized nicotine versus, you know, smoking cigarettes. But again, you know, based on what we know about combustion versus vaporization, what are sort of the bare facts here? Well, nicotine is the primary psychoactive agent and the primary addictive component in cigarettes. But a lot of the nasty stuff that causes health issues, aside from the addictive component here, are really products of combustion. So I would expect, I would be surprised if there wasn't a difference even between vaping and combusting a nicotine product or tobacco product in terms of the ill health effects. I would expect it to be always higher for combustion than a vaporized product, assuming, you know, you don't have any weird dilutants in the vape product or something like that. Just because of what we said before, the high temperatures of combustion produce new toxic compounds by melting the other molecules that are there that aren't necessarily toxic anyway. So how to compare those head to head, I don't know. But it's a very different beast. You know, nicotine is a psychostimulant. THC is a cannabinoid. It's a CB1 receptor agonist. We know that CB1 receptors are very plentiful in the blood vessels, in the heart and elsewhere. In fact, you know, the reason your eyes get red is because you got CB1 receptors. Yeah, it's vasodilation in the blood vessels of your eye. And so it's going to affect your blood vessels all throughout your body. It's hard to do a one-to-one comparison there because they really are different drugs in terms of the pharmacology and the mechanisms they engage.
So bottom line, you get a person, you know, and I've had older people in my life come to me and go, cannabis, man, for the heart, you know, and I kind of tell them, like, talk to your doctor. And if you got a heart issue, like, look at it. And, you know, in general, moderation in all things tends to be the way to go. And like flower vapes now, especially, seem really germane to the discussion. And that's where I kind of land on. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, always talk to your doctor, especially if you have any kind of cardiovascular issue, if you're going to be inhaling or consuming anything new. And, you know, what are the bare bones facts here? If you're consuming THC, it's going to cause an acute temporary increase in your heart rate. You know, dose matters, as we all know. So start low and go slow.
Reality matters.
I mean, like you, I'm a big fan of flower vaporization because it's just the flower. It's just heating it up, but not so high that you get combustion. So you're not going to get a lot of the nasty stuff that comes with lighting that plant biomass on fire. And, you know, inhalation is going directly to your lungs. So it's obviously going to have an effect there, but, you know, you can really titrate the dose easily, right? You can take one little puff and see how you react, and then two or three if you want. And you can stop at any point. If you eat THC, it's going to be metabolized in a different way. It's going to sort of have a much longer time course of its effect. And you can titrate the dose, right? You can eat just 1 milligram and then two. But of course, the time lag in terms of when you ingest compared to when you feel the effects makes it difficult for people to know exactly when to stop.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe that entire association is just Delta 11 THC. I know that stuff gets right on top of me. It's a whole different ball game than just the smoke stuff.
Yeah, it's conceivable, but we know that THC is a CB1 receptor activator. There's a lot of those in the heart. There's definitely cardiovascular change that comes from having a cannabinoid like that.
Yeah, and I know they're telling people with issues with the heart, they have to be careful about a bunch of activities, whether it's running a marathon, or I know that shoveling snow every year is what sends a lot of those older guys into the ER. You know, they get off the couch and they start digging, and it's cold. Anyway, a lot more to learn.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I'm not a cardiologist, but in general, a good rule of thumb is probably, you know, if you have any comorbidities or any existing heart issues, you probably don't want to abruptly and drastically change your heart rate. So warming up and slowly changing your activity levels and things like that is probably advisable.
Well, Dr. Nick Jacomas, Chief Science Officer for Leafly, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. Till next time.
All right. Thanks, David.
Yeah, thanks, Leafly Nation. This is David Down, Senior Editor over at Leafly, signing off on cannabis and cardiac health. Take care. Be well.